Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is A Vague Idea. After Dark. It's a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Rigoli, and each week we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week we have two very After Dark appropriate, very sensuous guests to discuss one of the sexiest places around. We're going to talk about Maine. Our first returning guest is a podcast hostess. She is also a student of the podcasting arts. And you like do comedy and acting and stuff too, right?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's funny to think about within the context. I don't know, post-pandemic, how are people talking about their identities since 2020?
What are we anymore? I am a stationary object that lives in a house.
You know, I'm effectively a potted plant. You know, yeah, before the pandemic, I was in New York City. I was doing stand-up and improv and putting on shows, doing that stuff, and not very well, I'm sure.
Crushing it on the deal.
Killing it, absolutely, you know. And it was the way that I had been writing as a writer since I was probably 15 years old. And it still is the way that I instinctually, it's the rhetorical strategy I instinctually fall on. That being said, these days, I haven't done stand-up since February 2020.
Well, it's kind of hard to figure out what's funny, right? Although we are going to be funny on this podcast. The lovely, wonderful guest who's been speaking is also a co-hostess of MILF. Movies I'd like to Thank fix.
You. Which I have an announcement about at the end of this.
Teaser. This is like when you had to watch all of Meet Joe Black to see that Phantom Menace trailer, guys. It's just like that. Get ready for 3.5 hours of Brad Pitt whispering.
Oh, yes, please.
But he does get hit by a bus. So it's
right
good.
Away, and it's the best scene in fucking movie history.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Also, Anthony Hopkins is in it. And and Claire Forlani. Remember her? But the guest.
Is she the hot one?
Yeah. She was the girl from Mallrats. I mean, they were all hot. Everybody.
I've never seen Mallrats, but yes, my name is
Her
Kate
name
Dallas.
Is Kate Dallas? Welcome back, Kate.
Thank you, Nate, for having me. Very lovely.
Our second returning guest is a podcast host and co-host in his own right. He is also a writer who has drafted one poem in the last month.
Confidence.
Built a lot of IKEA furniture. Hey, there's nothing wrong with it. You've written more poems than I have. I haven't written shit, but I have built a lot of IKEA furniture too. You should listen to him on Movie of the Year, as well as the Superhero Show. Are you on other shows, Mike? I'm sorry.
Currently, no.
Great. Then I did perfect, and I should just cut that out, but I won't because I believe in transparency.
They could go back and listen to the OCD 100 episodes.
Hell yeah. It's Mike Ravagno. Mike, welcome back.
Thank you for having me here. It's so nice to see both of you. Kate, I do want to make you feel better. You haven't done stand-up since, what'd you say, February 2020? I have not done stand-up, a thing I crafted my identity, my adult identity, around since May 2015. So.
Okay, yeah. No, that's
You know how
thing.
Long? That's so long ago. There's no way I'm like, I'll get back into it. No, I won't. I'm fucking done.
In fairness, podcasting is also known as sit down, which is a different kind of comedy.
Yeah, you don't have to try as hard.
Yeah. Well, there's any brick wall behind you.
Well, there's, I mean, very easily. Give me but 10 seconds, sir. I can make sure there are bricks behind me.
Oh, shit.
To me, it is a very, I think that I had a distinct interest in radio, audio, podcast world. I think that I'd already started consuming more of that than television by the time the pandemic hit. But when it did, and all of the media I consumed was via radio, and I saw, it felt like the choice was, do I want to be someone who writes for a wannabe clickhole? Do I want to be a person who, with 200 followers, has front-facing comedy videos? Like, you know, like front-facing camera comedy, like character videos. Or do I want to do a podcast? Mm-hmm. And that's where I landed. And I am now, as an artist, exploring that in a way that, like, I don't know if I'm going to do anything with it, but I think it's more exciting to me than stand up right now.
I've heard them call you Gen Z's Cherry Glazer.
Thank you.
Not to be confused with the Gen Z artist Cherry Glazer, who's a musician.
That's who I thought you were talking about.
No. Cherry Glazer. See, in your world. People in my generation, which is only in the scheme of things a little older than you, Cherry Glazer is a longtime morning host of NPR. And then this fucking musician decided to be like, no, I'm Cherry Glazer. And it's very confusing.
Sneaking cigarettes at lunchtime. Sun feels safe and divine. No, it's a Cherry Glazer song. Oh, no, it's not a Cherry Glazer song. It's just, to me, the same. For those who know, they'll know.
Great. Hey, listeners, if you know
at
that
$10
song,
is
tweet at us.
Cherry Glazer heads song, know. Right? The Kate heads know. Wait, is Had $10 the big Cherry Glazer song?
Nate, be a goddamn host. My failing is I know a slight reference and I'll start talking about it like I know, and then somebody knows more than me, I'm like, oh no, we've gone too far.
I don't know.
As the oldest person in the group right now, I have no idea what you're talking about. I am 40 years old.
Do you feel it? What does 40 feel like?
Oh, honest to God, it feels great, and I'm a little terrified that I'm not more grown up, because I'm definitely not.
Yeah, no.
Like the most exciting thing that I'm doing is this, and having a lot of jobs, and I bought a punching bag, so now I get my exercise by punching stuff.
That's so fun. That's the boy version of girls getting exercise by stripping.
See, there you go. Okay, good. Well, then, hey, I need to work my way through medical school then by punching.
My day job is punching.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's really easy to write prescriptions for pain medication if you punch the patient first.
I have a question for you, because I wonder, and obviously I'm not being a particularly good podcast guest, so you can stop me whenever, when you're ready to like get back.
The whole premise of this show is to have good conversation. So just bring it on, and look, we'll get.
I'm interested in talking to both of you guys. So Nate, you're 40. Mike, how old are you?
35.
I'm 26. So my question has to do with partnership and the conversation on all of this. How long have you been with your current partner when you talk about aging?
7 years.
7 years, Mike. What about you?
10 years.
10 years. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about I'm becoming older and I'm comfortable with that, think about it from the perspective of white dudes and partnered people. And what do you think would change if you didn't have, I guess, any of those criteria? But specifically, I think the thing that's you can probably speak to the most within your own experience is who you were without a partner versus who you are with. And who you are now, how much was time, and how much was your partner?
All right, Mark Maron.
Seriously, this is going to be, we're going to win a Pulitzer for this episode. I feel like honestly, the big thing for me was a combination of just getting older, right? Like there's a certain, at least me personally, I had a kind of flighty vision of what love was into my early 30s, right? And when I met my wife, like it was just sort of a surprise that I got along with somebody. You know, we've had a relationship with complicated stuff, as I think everybody does. We've been together 10 years. There's been ups, there's been downs. Nothing too down, but I mean there's been stuff, right? It's a roller coaster. It's good life. Time. Yeah, it's life. I think there's something cool that happens where it's just like a sense of sort of peace with stuff. I feel like I spent a lot of my life searching for a person, and that once that motivator was able to go away, it sort of like allows you to go, oh, cool. I'm just allowed to like be myself now. This is great. I don't have to try to keep figuring out who I am to figure out who I'm supposed to be with. I could just be me. Now, this speaks directly to my own neuroses, and probably, you know, everyone's mileage may vary.
No, I mean, I could talk to you guys about this for the next 2 hours, but I know we have a specific topic.
Now Kate's the host and she's giving out points.
It's true.
3 points so far to Lady Love.
It's true. She's in our corner.
She's won us all. In fact, I think we should each as almost an offering in a biblical sense, give her a point. I give Lady Love a point.
I also give Lady Love a point.
So far, Lady Love has 2 points and a pound of flesh. Nate, hit us with what this episode's about.
Hey, we're going to talk about Maine, which is where Kate is and where Mike has never been.
I've heard of. Look, I'm going to be real honest. I come on as a master fucking expert. This is my fourth or fifth appearance, I think, on A Vague Idea. And I've never had just A Vague Idea. I've had the fucking Webster's Dictionary definition idea of everything I've ever talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I got nothing. I've heard of Maine, but I'm going to still win this shit.
I have a good feeling about this for both of you. Round number one, Kate. Do you have a vague idea about a Maine coon? A Maine coon.
Maine coon. Is that a type of animal?
It is a type of animal. I will grant you that.
It's a type of animal. Is a Maine coon, or are those two different words, Maine coon?
Correct. Maine like the state, coon like C-O-O-N, coon. Yeah.
So we're talking about coon versions.
Like take off the rock.
Take off the rock. But we're talking about Maine versions of that animal.
This is my side coon. This is my Maine coon.
My Maine coon.
Some of this is getting a little too.
Yeah, for three whites, I don't
this
like
is,
this.
This is getting concerning. I think we're going to get the Pulitzer scraped back.
Let's take a step back. I'm going to, okay, this is what I'll say. Okay. Maine coon.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Can you define?
Use it in a sentence. Okay, ready?
We're so ready.
They told me. I swear to God, they told me.
Uh-huh.
That if I just left my socks open and smelly like that, Maine coons would be at my doorstep within 12 hours.
Here's what I'm liking, is we went from NPR to Tim Robinson in like 2 seconds.
Maine coons.
Great. Okay. Mike,
Maine coons.
Mike, anything to add about Maine coons?
Maine coons. Should I do it in the same? They are big, giant, fluffy cats with striped tails, my friend. They're so good to cuddle and pet and rub against your face.
They sure are. They sure are. Yeah. The Maine coon is a very large domesticated cat breed. They're like the size of, I mean, they're the size of like my corgi, like Rocket. Like we're talking like 25 pound cats. They are big.
Fat cats.
Yeah. Yeah. They are large and sociable. They have the nickname the gentle giant. And they are characterized by prominent ruff along its chest, a robust bone structure, rectangular body shape, and an uneven two-layered coat with longer guard hairs over a silky satin undercoat.
Okay, so I don't want to push too hard, but I do wonder, Maine coons, these cats, have they been around for 200 years or like 2,000 years?
They were popular in cat shows in the late 19th century. But they don't exactly know where they came from. They're like a folk tale kind of cat. One story of their origin involves Marie Antoinette. The story goes that before her death, she attempted to escape from France with the help of Captain Samuel Clo. And aboard his ship, there were six like big Turkish cats or Siberian cats. And even though she didn't get the United States, those cats ended up in Wiscasset, Maine, safely, where they bred with other cats to create a super cat.
Ooh.
Bigger and better than the rest.
How wolves and coyotes are getting together now.
Exactly.
It's about time. It's about time.
Those crazy kids have so much in common.
Wolfodies.
If they just talked.
It's true. So great job. I'm going to give Mike 2 points and Kate 1 point. For Maine coon.
Yeah, because I bet if you left your smelly socks out, Maine coons would come a calling.
They would. They definitely would, because there's a good chance, because of the amount of fish that you eat, Kate, that your socks would have just a little bit of that fish smell.
Just enough. No, I agree. I think that since moving to Maine, I have done everything in my power.
But yeah, you now wear a fisherman's beanie.
To be as smelly as possible. I'm doing everything I can.
Fit in.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I do.
How you get woodsy.
So much do I wish this was a video podcast, because I feel like, not that we watched Kate finish her box of wine, but that her beanie has just gotten taller and taller and taller, and her facial expressions more and more expressive. And I love it.
Thank you for nailing exactly the experience of this Zoom call.
Yeah, yeah. This is, hey, look, we're living in a golden age right now. This is 3D podcasting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Round number two, Mike.
Yes.
Do you have a vague idea about the USS Maine?
Is this the one? The USS Maine, let's say.
Mike, do not Google. I really take issue with Googling. This
hands
context.
Up. You can see my hands the whole time. Keep me honest. The USS Maine was off the coast of one of the Philippine islands, got hit, and then those sailors were in the water for 12 hours, and one by one, sharks ate them. And do you know what the scariest part was? When the rescue helicopter's family came, but they were still climbing up those ladders, that was the most terrifying part for the sailors at the USS Maine.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, because they had a fear of helicopters, the entire crew.
Helicopters. What if there's sharks in the sky?
It was like, no, no, guys, there's a Sharknado coming. You know, we were safest in the water. They're all in the air.
Yeah. Growing up, that was one of my dad's favorite scenes, I think, of all time.
It's one of the best ever, right?
I wish I knew that monologue better, and not just the vague. I had a vague idea about that monologue.
You've got just parts of the USS Indianapolis.
I knew it was a different.
Yeah,
I knew it was a city.
Dark,
I knew it was
like a doll's eye. and then cue me lifting up my sweater to be like, I got an appendix scar.
Nice. Yes.
And it is dark like a doll's eye.
Kate, anything to add about the USS Maine? Do you have anything?
The USS Maine. I'd say my USS Maine is the USSR, all of those beautiful women doing what they do best. So USS, can they refer to either boats or entertainers? What is USS?
You think?
I mean, it would be a United States ship. Yeah.
Okay, and then USSR, what is that?
The United Soviet Socialist Republics.
So that's one of ours?
Yeah. One of ours. And the SS Enterprise, what is that?
That's the SSR, and it's the USSR Enterprise. See, that's how they get you on the AP test.
Well, no, see, it's the USS Renterprise because you have to return it after your 5-year mission.
And that was the deal with Voyager. They got lost and their late fees were racked.
Yeah, it's a library book thing.
It's a library book thing.
You don't want the Federation library cops coming after you.
Mm-mm. That's good. I did not contribute. You know, I wasn't yes ending. I was just like indulging in the universe you built.
You're,
and I was like, that's good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. I like it. The USS Maine was a Navy ship that was sank in Havana Harbor in February of 1898, which led to the outbreak of the Spanish-American War, thanks to yellow journalism.
Ooh.
So the phrase, remember the Maine, to hell with Spain, became a rallying cry in this country as we had to turn away from the possible opportunities to change the way the power structure in the society was and direct it towards someone less fortunate.
Yeah.
Given who Spain is now, it seems so funny that they were like a competitor of the world stage, not like a place to party, neat, great meats.
Right. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
That's
now
what
it's
they
just
get
like a
for
cool...
not being a part of the coolest party of all time, World War I.
I can't wait until, and it'll be well after I'm dead, so I really can't wait until the United States reaches the point where they retire from being a leader and just let no, China, you can do it.
It's
and we'll
up,
be the next party wave, right?
Yeah,
and the US
I'm hoping
is gonna be the best wreck.
I'm hoping that TikTok really changes timelines for us and that, because John Oliver has a really great bit about like, God, it feels so good to just like know your empire is collapsed. Like it's just, it's done. It's behind you. It's not your job anymore to be Mr. Big Shot. Like I would love
Let's
that
embrace that.
Let's
it's liberating, right? It's like blowing out your knee before the big game. You're like, hey, you know what? I can't do anything about it.
Well, I think, I don't know. Okay. So this is, I'll let you keep posting.
I guess I'll keep posting.
Keep posting, because I have conversations.
So I'm going to give Mike a point, and I'm going to give Kate a point, because you know what? Banter. So you're both doing great. You're both doing great. It's time to play our first game. It's time to play I See What You Did There. And I See What You Did There is everyone's favorite game, except the people who are playing it.
Okay.
So we're going to start with you, Kate. And yes. Remember, these are going to be kind of a word salad before and after, some sort of witty mashup as it pertains to Maine and things Maine-like. So here's your clue. What if Lady Gaga's waitress turned country sensation hooks up with a North Atlantic crustacean in a punnily titled sequel film? What would you call that film?
Say it to me one more time.
What if Lady Gaga's waitress turned country sensation hooks up with a North Atlantic crustacean in a punnily titled sequel film?
I hear some like Googling, maybe.
No. I'm typing out what he just said.
Oh, okay. You're a visual learner. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So the first thing I hear is in a punnily titled sequel.
Yeah. Punnily titled sequel.
It's a Lady Gaga movie.
It's a Lady Gaga movie. Yep.
Means the first movie is A Star is Born, which means that the answer rhymes with A Star is Born.
Yeah. So you need to incorporate a North Atlantic crustacean into the punny title.
Lobster.
Great. Put it all together.
Okay. Lady Gaga waitress turns country sensation hooks up with a North Atlantic. Okay. So lobster, Lady Gaga waitress turned country sensation is the thing that's really stumbling me. Lady Gaga waitress turned country sensation.
You already got this part. You figure you got the movie already.
Yeah, a lobster is born. That's not it.
A lobster is born. Yeah,
a lobster is born is the answer.
Yeah, very good. You see what I did there?
Okay, I see what he did there. And the thing is that the audience, oh God, you should feel the adrenaline in my bones. No, I was pounding thinking music. Very hard. I was thinking very hard. That's all I have to say about it.
All right, Mike, number two. You might hide among the bushes if, surprisingly, they'd offer idiomatic help in a difficult time at their Maine-based compound.
You might hide among the bushes if they offered idiomatic help in their Maine-based compound.
Uh-huh.
That is what you said?
Yeah, idiomatic help in a difficult time, just to help you with the idiom.
In a difficult time, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Between
a rock and a hard place, what do I know about bushes or the state of Maine?
What do you know about bushes in the state of Maine?
Portland, Maine is the one city I can name. Don't hide your light under Maine's bushel.
I like that a lot.
I hate that I knew Kate's, but it really is. The minute the spotlight's on you, you're like, what are words?
How about this? If I tell you that when I say you might hide among the bushes, the B is capitalized.
Oh, shit. Okay. Is there a Cape Town? There's fucking one of our evilest dynasties of America live up there, I assume. Laura, George W., the other one. Jeb! Exclamation point.
Jeb! Exclamation.
Jeb!
Cape Canaveral. I don't know.
All right. Kate, do you have a guess for this?
Mm-mm, not even a little.
Not even a little? All right. Hey, you know what?
I didn't spend any of my individual time trying to answer it.
Here's the fun thing. You both get a point when I stump you both. So, hey, look at that.
Nice.
The answer I was going for was Kenny Bunkport in a storm.
I don't know what the first part means, but okay, I get bored in the storm.
Kennebunkport is the town in Maine where the bushes have their compound.
Oh.
And port in a storm is an idiom about finding help in a difficult time. You see what I did there.
I see what you did there. I think it also means fucking anybody all around the world now, too.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Well, hey, you know what?
Idioms can change.
It's true.
Idioms change. They change.
So do idiots, Mom.
Hey. That's right, Mom.
I can change. My mom calls me an idiot. That's what I was trying to do.
You're like Rocky. If you can change, they can change.
Deep down, I don't think there's anything as psychologically damaging as a mother saying, you can never change.
It's true.
That's my personal hell.
Kate's dropping truth bombs tonight.
My personal hell is a mother being like, you will never be more than what you are right now.
Oof.
That is unnecessarily harsh in every possible way. That's like disown the mom.
Trauma.
Yeah, seriously. Oh,
no,
man.
That's our next one. This came up on our last one. We're like, what are we going to do next on air? Trauma. That's the,
we'll do a trauma.
Trauma. Yeah, the notion of trauma. We'll tackle it.
It'll be so fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be real quippy. Mm-hmm. All right, number three, Kate.
Yes.
You're totally gonna get this one. I believe in you. Captain Hansen Gregory invented this nationally beloved tasty nothingness in Maine, and he got real uppity about it too. What saying am I alluding to / thing did he invent? Mash them together.
Okay, repeat it just one more time.
Yeah, of course.
Slowly, yeah.
Captain Hansen Gregory invented this nationally beloved tasty nothingness in Maine, and he got real uppity about it too. So I'm looking for a thing that he invented that it was a tasty nothingness, and a phrase that might link to that about being really uppity about something.
Wait, a phrase that links to it is different than, because I think I know the answer.
Okay.
In the abstract.
Great.
But there's a phrase.
Well, it's an idiom about being uppity about something. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's related to the thing.
It's related to the thing he invented. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think he invented?
Donuts.
Great. Great. What's a nothingness associated with a donut?
A hole.
Okay. So donut hole. Now, what's an idiom about being uppity about something that would link to donut hole?
May I try, Kate?
Yeah, I don't know it. I do not know it. I was going to say something else, but I don't know it.
Got to stick up his donut hole?
Mike, I'm going to give you a point. I like that. You painted a word picture. I like that a lot. Kate, I'm going to give you a point for donut hole. I was going for donut holier than thou.
Holier than thou.
Harder than I was able to offer today. Is the synopsis.
You saw what I did there, though. That's what matters.
I saw what you did there.
Even though maybe not. Maybe that one was a little bit like it's real foggy, but I kind of see what you're doing.
I see what you did there.
All right, number four, and then this is over, I promise. Mike. Link the secondary nickname for Mainers with a particularly spacious domicile, and you'll get the name of this classic Lucasfilm point-and-click game.
I have no fucking clue.
Oh.
Y'all are nerds.
What? I don't know. Say it one more time.
Link the secondary nickname for Mainers.
Okay.
With a particularly spacious domicile, and you'll get the name of this classic Lucasfilm point-and-click game.
Christ, I wish I knew more nicknames of Mainers, more nicknames of Lucas point-and-click games. Is there like Clam Digger's Mansion?
Mansion is the correct mansion. I is the correct word. Mansion. So yeah,
Mansion on the Moon. Mansion on Endor. Mansion Tatooine. Mansion.
It's not a Star Wars property. I'll give you that.
It's not a Star Wars property.
It's not a Star Wars thing.
What the fuck else did that guy do? Mansion American Graffiti. You know that old school game. I got to pass. I don't know. Mansioner's Revenge. Mansion Monkey Island.
I'm gonna give you a point for Mansion. You got that much. Kate, do you have any guesses for what a secondary name for Mainers is?
I'm a Mariners.
It's not a bad guess. Mainers, it's not Mansion what I'm going
would be a
for.
Fun game.
Yeah. Mariners, those are the two that I know of. But what's the answer?
The answer is Maniac. Maniac Mansion is the video game.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be called a maniac.
You're a maniac now.
A maniac. I'm a maniac.
Oh, that got scary.
She's a maniac. That's for sure.
I'm a maniac. So watch out, podcast world.
It's crazy how you can unfold 10 butterfly knives at once, Kate, as you say I'm a maniac.
Yeah, I don't even know where you were holding all of them.
Maniac. In between each of my fingers.
Nice.
The thing you don't think about is just how much storage space there is between each of your fingers.
Yeah, you're an ultra Wolverine.
Exactly.
Yeah. X-23, what about X-24?
Truly.
Her name is Honey Badger. She goes
nice.
By
Abby. And I'll be honest, and she don't care.
It's a great job on I See What You Did There. The pain is over. Hey, it's time for round number three.
Hell yeah!
So Kate, do you have a vague idea about Castle Rock, Maine? Castle Rock, Maine.
I shoot my eyebrows. Don't think about it.
Just we'll now?
I was going to ask.
No, within the past week, though. It was the wrong choice, but I can't handle it every moment of every day. You know, it's like...
You don't
like,
need to.
Yeah. Plus, your facial expressions, you've lost all that drag that eyebrows create.
No, exactly. Yeah. You have never met a sleeker face. No, okay. So the question was about Castle Rock.
Castle Rock, Maine. Do you have a vague idea about it?
So my vague idea about Castle Rock, Maine is that there is a program. If I had to believe, it's most likely rooted in some sort of Stephen King situation called Castle Rock. Castle Rock is, in my mind, a very spooky place because there's a spooky TV show about it. And a lot of Maine is spooky because Mr. Stephen King writes a lot of Maine stories. I don't know. I am sincerely interested in what that means, because I feel like a lot of people who are talking about Maine outside of Maine, like Stephen King, is one of the big touchstones. And so I'm interested in what that means.
He put it on the map. Maine didn't exist before him.
True. It's true. Everybody was like, where are we?
I don't know.
And Stephen King existed. Yeah. Very good, Kate. Anything to add, Mike, about Castle Rock, Maine?
Yeah, I think it's one of his go-to towns. I'm guessing it's near Derry, Maine, where it took place. But Castle Rock, the show Kate mentioned, it's like a shared universe of characters from all of his stories kind of live in and out of the town in that show. And Castle Rock Entertainment in the 90s put out some good entertainment young Mike used to like.
They sure did. They had a lighthouse in the logo.
I don't remember what they made. I just remember that logo, though.
Man, those early film logos, those production company logos. It's sad that now there's only three left.
TriStar was the Pegasus.
Yeah, the Pegasus that sometimes was voiced by Bruce Willis.
What? I don't remember that.
Is that true?
For the Look Who's Talking movies.
Yes, correct. In the Look Who's Talking movies, it was like, hey, yeehaw, I'm a horse. But, you know, in a Bruce Willis voice. So he was playing harmonica and saying yippee-ki-yay. Yeah, you're both absolutely correct. Castle Rock, Maine is one of Stephen King's go-to fictional Maine towns, like Derry, Maine, and Jerusalem's Lot. Castle Rock first appeared in The Dead Zone in 1979. It's also featured in Needful Things, where Castle Rock was about 1,500 people strong in the late 1950s.
Is Castle Rock a real place?
It is not. It's just a made-up town that he created, sometimes referred to as The Rock, not to be confused with Dwayne Johnson or the Michael Bay movie.
I'm going to escape from The Rock. That's not a great Sean Connery. I'll work on it. I'll come back next time.
It's time to get out of The Rock.
There we go.
That's a man Dragonheart.
Maybe I'm losing my sex appeal.
He says that in that movie too.
Did you like Dragonheart?
I loved Dragonheart as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
I am the last one.
It was great.
Dragon culture. I mean,
why don't we do dragons? Next one's dragons. That's what it's got to be, right?
Cool. I mean, we could just stop this right now and do dragons.
No, we know so much about Maine. Let's
keep
going.
So much about Maine. Let's keep going. But I got more to I'll talk to both of you about this.
Yeah, we will drag on dragons in a positive way. We're not going to drag on dragons. You know,
we're going to drag them for filth.
Yeah. But Stephen King grew up in Durham, Maine. So probably that's named Derry after Durham, kind of, right? You know,
the dairy industry is named after Durham. That's a fact. It's a science fact.
science facts.
So yeah, great job, both of you. I'm going to award you each 2 points. And now it's time for round number 4. Mike, do you have a vague idea about Julie the Cat Gaffney?
Julie the Cat Gaffney was known all throughout Portland, Maine. And she was a swashbuckler in a time where ladies could not be. She robbed from the rich. She did not give to the poor. She gave to Julie. And you know what? More power to her. That's the American way.
Very good. Very good. Kate, do you have anything to add about Julie the Cat Gaffney?
Julie the Cat Gaffney. So most women who are famed from pre-1930 have something to do with death. Did she kill someone?
I will say she stopped a lot of things.
Okay, so is she a spiritualist? Is she a medium? Is she a...
Do mediums stop things?
Do mediums stop things famously? You know how effective.
More often than a small, I suppose, at least.
Kate, you've turned into full De Niro for some reason. When you ask questions, it's very threatening. Do mediums stop things usually?
And you know
what
the difference is?
I'm a medium. Can you milk me?
You know what the difference is? My beanie now shows you that I don't have eyebrows.
Yes.
It's true. It's true. Your vulnerability is on the outside, which we all have a hard time with. But this is a safe space. This is a safe podcast. We don't have to have eyebrows here. In fact, live on the air, Mike, let's shave our eyebrows off.
Nate, it's very, very sweet of you to think that I'm intimidated by the fact that you guys have eyebrows.
No, I think it's a power move that she doesn't. She's laughing that I have five people's eyebrows on my face.
True. It's true. It's wild. You look like the guy that plays Banquo in the new Coen Brothers Macbeth movie.
I make Eugene Levy look like Kate's face right now. If I didn't shave my eye, on the side, on the temples and in the middle, it would legit just go from one side of my hair across my face to the other side of the hair.
Really?
Got the Anthony Davis. Yeah.
You should let it go. I think you should let it go and see what happens.
Here, very early on, and I don't know if it's going to be kept in the show, you asked us about partnership. I would no longer have that partner if I let that happen.
Has she talked about that?
No, mostly is if I shave my face, she freaks out. So I don't want to even fuck with the eyebrows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Just keep all the hair where it is now.
I think it just needs to stay where it is.
Yeah,
it's the safest move.
Well, hey, Julie, the cat Gaffney, is a hockey player, a fictional hockey player. She played goalie for the Mighty Ducks in D2, the Mighty Ducks.
Shit.
She was from Bangor, Maine.
Is she a duck or is she a human?
She's a human. Yeah, she's a human lady. Yeah.
You might be thinking of the cartoon The Mighty Ducks, where the Mighty Ducks were suddenly aliens who looked like ducks who came down and lived in Anaheim.
I found that very confusing when it happened.
It was. It is to this day.
It's like, those aren't the kid ducks I'm used to.
But yeah, Julie the Cat Gaffney, she had a really quick glove, and stopped the Iceland team by making a glove save.
Some might say a swashbucklingly quick glove.
It's true. It buckled some swash. I will say that. If anybody was going to buckle swash, it was Julie the Cat Gaffney. I'm going to give you each 1 point.
Thank you. That's fair.
He's so kind to us, Kate.
No, he is at the very least fair.
Yeah, it's not kindness. It's just fairness. Fair. It's time to play our second game. It's time now for the Thunderdome. So this week in the Thunderdome, you have two famous Mainers facing off, perhaps maniacs. They are, she sings, she dances, she is kind of fun, awkward leading lady. It's Anna Kendrick.
Oh, is she from Maine?
She is of Maine, yeah. She's from Maine. And across the room is a rough and tumble, flannel shirt wearing, fingerless gloves wearing, Judd Nelson, also from Maine. So battle to the death between Anna Kendrick and Judd Nelson.
So is the battle to the death two of them as individuals or as characters using their resources?
However you want to put it together is fine with me. Just walk us through a scenario. Tell us a story.
One would think that Judd Nelson would instantly have it up on Anna Kendrick. I mean, he's been bullying teenage girls on and off screen since the 80s.
It's true. He's got a lot of practice.
He made Molly Ringwald's life a living hell in real life during The Breakfast Club. That's what life was like at my house Christmas.
Wait, in what way? Wait, tell us how.
Oh, he bullied the shit out of her, IRL. He like, and it was before he was like, oh, it's method acting. He was like, what? She's a chick. I'm a dude. I'm going to be a fucking dick to her. He was a real piece of shit. So you would think he could get one over. Anna Kendrick's 5 foot nothing. Like she's a tiny little hobbit lady, but she has secret skills, cup singing. And normal singing. She's with Bill Hader, who is an assassin. And Judd Nelson is old as shit now. And the last thing I saw him on was when I rewatched Airheads, when he was Jimmy the Slimeball record exec. I think Anna Kendrick would kick the living shit out of Judd Nelson. She would tear his stupid little road strip goatee off his face. He would cry and she would rip his nuts off with a Red Solo cup and drink it down.
Damn. Vivid. And I like it. Great. Kate, what do you think's going to happen here?
I mean, I think I have a lot of complicated feelings around Anna Kendrick. So let me detail them.
Yeah. Yeah. Please. Let's hear it. Let's understand.
So there are a lot of white girls my age who probably knew about her before me because she is Broadway, I don't know if it, royalty, but she's been on Broadway since she was a little girl.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she's always, so to me, like to me, the cultural icebreaker for Anna Kendrick is Twilight. She'd been on Broadway in hyper successful productions since she was like 10, you know, like her as the scrappy underdog has absolutely never been the narrative, which I do think is very important for Anna Kendrick. I think that she is the most distinctly likable. The first iteration of Anna Kendrick I ever was introduced to was Twilight. Mm-hmm. And she was very funny because her role was basically the proxy for every not Bella, which is pretty much everyone who isn't Stephanie Meyer.
So a high school girl with a personality.
High school girl with a personality, exactly. And she's great and she's hilarious. And so then, and then Pitch Perfect and then all these other things. And so like, you know, but if I had to guess, I also separately was very in love with Bill Hader.
Ah, so that's what this is about. Yeah. Yeah.
Growing up. And I think it's very heavily influenced by the fact that I am the middle child of three daughters. I am very deeply charmed by men who have only female progeny. I think that it changes the way that they are as people. It has to, just has to. When your job is to be the like point guard of all these young females, your world fundamentally changes.
I have daughters. I get that sexual harassment's bad now.
Exactly, exactly. So think about how hard it is for dudes who have had daughters, which is evident given the past, you know, forever. And then, yeah, think about Bill Hader. He's got three daughters with his wife and yeah, they divorced within the past 5 years. And so him dating Anna Kendrick to me is actually, it proves to me that Bill Hader likes empowered women. And it proves to me that Anna Kendrick has a sense of humor. How do you guys feel about all of it?
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think absolutely. It's likable for both of their brands. I think it's a good move.
Now, how do you feel about Judd Nelson?
Judd Nelson, I have not thought about it until he turned up in a very fun turn of events in an episode of Psych where, this was back when I was in high school. He was in Psych. He was just like a dude who was on the show. Judd Nelson. No, I think a better question all three of us should ask. What is the member of the Breakfast Club that you would most likely marry? Specific question.
Ally Sheedy.
Yeah, I was going to say in real life or the fantasy. I guess it's both. It's Ally Sheedy.
Is that the dark hair?
The basket case, yeah.
The one who snows dandruff onto her. Like, that
the
is
the most iconic. Iconic scene is that.
I was going to say the listeners don't know my wife, but she's been on this show. That is my wife.
Yeah, yeah. Renee Floyd, everyone. Yeah. Go back to whichever episode number that was.
Marketing.
106.
I don't remember the number.
Yeah, something like that.
The topic is marketing.
I have a question that's separate from most things. But I think
Kate keeps being like, fuck your game, Nate. I want to talk about this. I love it. Keep going.
It's fine.
Okay. I want to hear from each of you, in your mind, little human beings, the kind of people you had crushes on versus the kind of person you ended up with. Tell me about that journey.
What age for crush?
Interesting. Okay. So I would say, as a person who has not been very well acquainted with young men in general, I'm interested in hearing your journey from, I would say, like 21 to 29 specifically.
Okay.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
21, a real piece of shit. I was a real piece of shit. On other podcasts, I've been called a stick man, which sounds braggy, but is not. I was a roly-poly fat kid, and then I got thin because I rollerbladed to school every day and used my thinness as a weapon.
Hell yeah.
And my geekiness.
Were you mean? Mike, were you mean?
I wasn't mean. I just used, hey, I know what it's like to have low self-esteem, and then would very much use that to hook up constantly.
Oh, the worst of all the answers. Okay.
Yeah, no, but I'm being honest about it.
I say that.
Right. I'm saying that meaning that's very honest and probably very true.
I'll own up. But also, so to where I'm now is I'm so what some have called quirky, others have called a fucking weirdo. Leave, please. So I didn't know until my wife that I could be with anybody who would actually like who I was.
That's the bing. That's the thing right there.
She's the first person who just kept, like, you know, hitting me in the stomach, be like, no, be more you, be more you all the time. And that's amazing.
What does that look like in practice? Be more you. What did be more you look like?
Somebody who, as I was falling asleep, would just spit cold water all over my face because she thought it was funny. So I knew I could do things like that back to her.
Setting a precedent of playfulness.
Yeah. That we now have framed Marvel art on the wall.
That's amazing. That's I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So crushes. Like, I think in my teens and early 20s, I had a crush on Allison Hannigan, the actress.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And very similar, actually, to my wife. So that worked out pretty well.
In what ways?
She had redder hair when we met, but, you know, just sort of the features, like more like Willow on Buffy than Allison Hannigan the person, because obviously I don't know Allison Hannigan the person, and I would be a fool to say that I do. though I did meet her once at a weird airport Sheridan Comic-Con thing in Denver when I was like 16, and I have a signed photograph over there in a drawer.
Hell yeah.
She's very nice. She's a very nice person.
Was she your crush on the show?
Oh, yeah. Everybody, when I would tell people that I watched Buffy, like, everybody would be like, oh, you like Sarah Michelle Gellar? I was like, no, it's all about.
You know. I have a question.
I loved Cordelia because I liked abusive women back in the day.
Yeah, well, hell yeah. Yeah. That's consistent with what I know about you, Mike.
I think as I've gotten older, I've seen that aspect where I'm like, oh yeah, man, Cordelia's really got something that is very alluring. Like, it's just interesting how my tastes have changed over time, and how, like, because your question was sort of like, hey, from 21 to 29, I was like, well, I kind of stopped having crushes on people sometime around like 23, because then it's just like, well, I don't really, it was more like, oh, well, I guess I have a crush on this, like, female acquaintance who I've seen at 5 different parties, and I find her really, really interesting, and whatever, nothing's going to happen, or something did happen, or whatever. You know, all my crushes became more practical in my 20s, whereas they were completely impractical.
Yes.
Well, practical is worth investigating. No, I fully agree. You know, like, I was a person whose sex life existed in her imagination for well into her mid 20s. I think, you know, like, that's a, not everyone has that experience, but some people do. And when you talk about, like, oh, your crushes on, you know, during the show, during this time, what is the what was the hard lesson you had to learn in the transition from I have a lot of crushes on girls who are on TV and I have a partner?
You have been going to fucking radio journalism school.
Yeah.
I think realizing that I, and growing up might be part of it, you know, it kind of feels like it coincides, but like that desperate, thirsty, aching need of a crush, at a certain point you go, oh, because this person is only two-dimensional, or I'm adding things, and how fake are they, and it's, you're not seeing the whole everything they are, and then you have to deal with somebody's real bullshit and shitty moods and bad smells, and they have to deal with your own that and toenail clippings or whatever it is. And so at a certain point, I think hopefully you get old enough and realize it's good to deal with the reality, and the people who don't are still into anime porn or whatever.
Well, because there's something real and authentic about understanding, oh, hey, you know what, this evening where I went to a party and had a really great time, and we got really drunk and we made out for a little bit, and then what ends up happening is not some sort of magical, you know, movie style romantic evening. What happens is somebody just starts crying, and you spend the whole night just having a conversation about something completely unrelated to anything that you thought was going to happen, which wouldn't happen in a movie, I guess, or at least it wouldn't happen in the idealized sort of form of a movie crush or a TV show crush. Because, like, TV shows tend to, I don't know, like, Mike too, I think, because we're both in the generation where, like, that sort of Joss Whedon style quippiness was just the staple. Like, everybody on Friends was very snappy, and everybody on Buffy was very snappy. Like, everybody on television was getting out of having serious conversations by saying something wacky and then like doing a move and leaving the room.
Some of us have lived a lot of our lives that way.
Well, like, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is the beauty of getting older is recognizing that not only does that not work, but it's okay that that doesn't work. And you can sit in a difficult moment instead of trying to diffuse it immediately, because diffusing those moments, while theoretically wonderful, just kicks the can for that moment until later. Like, you can only diffuse so many times before eventually, like, oh, the moment gets really big and then there's no diffusing anything.
Well, be less Joss Whedon and more Richard Linklater.
Yeah.
The before trilogy is growing up.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. But Nate, I mean, you met your wife, you were 30?
Yeah, I was 30. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what was the context and why do you think it's worked for 10 years? Because that's a long time.
Yeah. You know, we met on the internet. We met on OkCupid, of all things.
Oh, really?
Back in the early days of online dating, when it was still a romantic fantasy.
No. Well, sincerely, it's like, I remember struggling, trying to figure out how to date someone, you know, wanting to connect with people, whatever. 2019, late 2019, and having a friend be like, you should go on OkCupid. And me being like, you mean where all the like lame, hyper sincere people are?
Yeah.
Is that how you guys, were you guys both in a place where you're like, I'm looking for someone to build a life with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's pretty much what it was. Like, I spent my 20s like having like three or four relationships that didn't work for one reason or the other, whether I was the impetus to exit or she was. And I reached a point where I was like, hey, you know what? I can't keep just going out and like having weekend parties when I'm 30 and getting drunk, which granted, like, I still enjoy to do that at 40. Like, it is, I mean, I theoretically do. I haven't done anything for two fucking years, but I think I still do like that.
Wait, why? No, never mind.
Part of the reason why it worked is because I'm with this person and we're going to figure this out. Whatever this becomes, right? This is just a variable. And when you decide that you're going to stick with it, you stick with it. And that's it. Like, I don't begrudge anybody who exits something that's awful or if it just doesn't work, because I certainly exited things that just didn't work when I was in my 20s. And if something awful ever did happen, like, we would have to deal with it. Like, we're human beings. But I think it is definitely like, you wake up every day, and I know it's cliche, but it's like, see the person for the first time again, to the best of your ability, right? Like, recognize that you're in an active, like, love is an activity, not a state of being, right? Like, you're not in love, you're like doing love. And if you're not doing it, if you stop doing it, you cease to be in it. And so you start doing other things, right? And usually, like, it's easy to go, oh, well, if you think lust is love, and so you do lust until you get bored of lust, and then you get tired because doing love is actually hard work, you go and you try to find a way to do lust again.
To me, I think that it's a very, very real divide, the line between, like, you're actually incorporated into my future, into all of the parts of me that I'm afraid of, all that stuff, versus being single and dating. How did the two of you, what was the moment where you were like, I've found someone, though, that even though it is fundamentally a risk, I'm ready to take this jump? I mean, I've never been married.
What's funny is I would be lying if I told you there was like a specific moment or any even specific feeling that said like, hey, you know what? You just got to do this. It was more like, I'm choosing to do this now. I want to do this. And if you care about the person you're on the journey with and you have a proven like basic, I don't know, like maybe it becomes less romantic sounding to be like, hey, you know what? We work well together. We have similar politics. We have similar interests. We're able to spend long periods together in silence without being uncomfortable, without having to feel like we have to fill this void. So you can actually be relaxed and be at peace. I don't know. And then it's just a matter of choosing and saying, okay, let's go forward. Because the only way you'll find out what's on the other side of the thing is if you go, right? Mm-hmm. And an easy thing about dating is going, well, but what if I miss out on something else? And it's like, well, yeah, you might. There's plenty of things that all of us will miss out on in our lives, but you'll also miss out on going forward if you don't go forward. And it's just really choosing when you want to do one or the other.
So did you choose to be a person who did, who was like, did you choose to be, I'm settling down? Or did you meet someone who made you think that's the time? As a presenting cis straight dude, different dynamic, even though we're saying it's more mutable these days. You might be the person who answers to the changes.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, I think it was both, right? Like it's one that I was interested in having a real relationship. And then it was also that the circumstances presented themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but you have to, you can't catch a fish unless you bait the hook, and you can't do something without putting your line in the water. I don't know. That metaphor didn't go where I wanted it to.
Is that how it feels for you? I don't know.
Yeah.
Because you met Renee younger, right?
Yeah,
you
guys, yeah.
It took you a long time to.
I met when I was 23, I want to say. And it was, we were buddies, and then it was very casual. And then we thought we were going to different countries across the world. And for whatever reasons, those things happened or didn't happen. And then we lived different lives, met each other's other partners. I think it's maturity and growth / the right person. And when you meet it, so a story I love to tell is, so years and years later, I think I was 28 when we met. And she was homeless for a while and staying at my place. And I was like, be cool. Don't like, I had seen her. I was like, I'm going to be in grad school. I'd gotten into a 4-year thing. So I was like, I'm going to be grad school. I'm not going to date. I'm just going to focus this. And I saw Renee and I was like, oh, I'm fucked. But she was with somebody. I was like, no, I'm cool. I'm dating, doing my thing. We're just buddies. And then they ended. And I was like, she has nowhere to live. You're going to be cool. You're not going to do anything. You're not going to be a creep. She's crashing her couch because she has nowhere to live. You're not going to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then she turned to me and she's like, so are we trying to fuck? And I was like, no. If we do this again, so much more than just that. And I laid
That's good.
Wait,
that's
Mike, good. Seriously, is that actually how that happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Very
that's,
nice.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. And so we went from, we shouldn't do this, to when are we getting married, in like 3 weeks, I think.
Which is very intense, but the thing that resonates so deeply or so beautifully about it when you share that story is the idea that, like, because I've at least digitally met Renee, like she's your person, like it makes sense. Oh, yeah. Like that, you know,
she's a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, oh absolutely, you know. Are we going to do this? Is this like, you know, I don't know. I that's such a fascinating crucible that your relationship has been through.
Because our initial early 20s version was just fucking and afraid of feelings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're both just like, we're too cool for feelings. And so, yeah, it was definitely it could be just that again. But I was, even though I was like, I need to be single, I shouldn't be with somebody again. I was just like, oh no, this is the person that I've inappropriately thought of for years. Like she was the one that got away through most of my 20s.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't got away, we both like just shook hands congenially and went and have a good life. Good deal. Right.
Sincerely, before you guys ended up together, I knew that about the two of you.
We have mutual friends who open their mouths too much, is what I would say.
In what world would like my understanding of the situation really affect your life?
No.
But back in the day, yeah, that was the thing that I remembered. But it has a lot to do with like, you know, you guys had this relationship where you were like, I'm not gonna be creepy, I'm not gonna be weird, I'm not gonna be XYZ thing. But you know, love and support is welcome when it's welcome. So it is very funny to realize. I think it's very hard for people to be like, the rules aren't hard and fast. It has a lot to do with personal chemistry. It also, you know, like,
yeah,
it's situations, yeah. It's personal chemistry. It's knowing where you actually are and being honest about it. I think going back to your initial question, this phase of the vague idea after dark is not what people expected.
Hey,
it's much more hard hitting and emotional.
It's real.
It's
after
real.
Dark.
It's much less, ooh, here's a nipple, and more like, here's 3 a.m. We're at Denny's. Let's get real.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love 3 a.m. Denny's. That's my life. Yeah.
It's, oh, fuck. I lost my train of thought. Oh, going back to the crush thing, the people who take crushes too seriously too long in their life are ones who throw marriages away because things get hard for a week.
Right.
Or not marriages, whatever, whatever.
Whatever it is, yeah, but it's when you throw something away because adversity happens or imperfection happens. And then you're like, oh, well, the thing that I wanted is not this because the thing I wanted was that crush thing. And it's like, well, the crush thing doesn't exist.
And I think I feel lucky that even in high school, I was in marching band, so you get thrown. There's 80 kids you just get hang out with and different, and you're like, oh, that conversation with that guy was so fucking cool for that one night. And then the next day you're like, wait. Remember the context and who that is. That person actually kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a very good thing. And then like, so in adult life, who cares if like you vibe with a coworker for a day? That doesn't change anything in your actual scheme of life, that you can be attracted to somebody or vibe with somebody for a day or a week. And that doesn't mean anything. And I think the very immature people are the people who are like, this must, everything I think and feel is real. No, it's fucking not. Your brain is just chemicals and soup and trying to lie to you all the time. And all it wants to you is, you should come, you should sit on the couch, you should do nothing, everything should be easy. And that is the bullshit lie that is human life.
Well, and the thing that you discover is that when you are confident in yourself, when you reach that point at whatever age that is where you actually are, you vibe with so many people very easily, because guess what people like? Yeah, people vibe with someone who is themselves. Preach. And then you start to recognize like, oh, not every time this happens is some sort of like burgeoning romance. This is just how people interact with a person who is present, you know? So yeah, great job, both of you on the Thunderdome. I'm going to give you each 2 points. Anna Kendrick wins, 2 points each. Yeah, Anna Kendrick was on Broadway in 1998.
Mm-hmm. She was an itty bitty baby girl. She's a wee one. She was a wee one.
And now from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Francaise Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. All right. If Florida is America's flaccid penis, then surely Maine must be its erect one. Discuss.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard, it's cold, it's got crabs, it's rugged. Isn't that what everybody wants in a dick?
It's a great point, Mike.
Yeah, you really hit it all just in one swoop.
Hey, speak from experience.
This is how I dismantle it. Okay.
Do it.
If I have learned one thing about New England, it's that they are Puritans to this day. The one thing that is different from them, from the rest of the country, and therefore the one thing that is worth investigating for each of those people, is the fact that like their state has existed since 1620. For me, it's a huge thing, the fact that we have like completely changed what it means to be American. Because so much of New England has this like old world relationship to it, where they still feel very deeply like the source of American culture. And
a lot of Maine was French too, was Acadia.
Yes.
Maine specifically always makes me think of a very specific kind of seafaring, rough and tumble, you know, salt of the earth, like rugged but also kind of refined people, but like not like New York refined, not like Connecticut, New York, a little, you know, a little rough,
refined with skills.
Yeah a very it's a blue collar, but blue collar progressivism, where it's like, hey, we're blue collar but we do it together, versus a blue collar but we fight amongst ourselves, that happens in other parts of the country.
I think it's a very complicated state for that reason, where it's like, I think that Maine has been around for a very long time. It's one of the earliest settled places geographically.
One of the 13, right?
Yeah, I think You should check though before I know.
Yeah, one of the 13, let's move on.
One of the 13, let's move on. No, but it for me, my perspective on it and on collecting the oral history of the people of the state of Maine has always been kind of the opposite understanding of what American means as an identity. Because I'm from the last continental state in the United States. I'm from Arizona. Our perspective on what it is to be Arizonan, on what it is to be American, on what it is to be a person is different from a lot of the East Coast, especially media influenced narrative around of it. So I think that is, for me, the thing that I want to talk about before at the very end of this, you know, is like
we have so much history with Maine because it's New England. But for those who, I mean, you're from Colorado, you're from California, like all of us are West Coast kids. Like we are actually not privy to what it feels like to be American from the East Coast.
Not in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, what do you guys feel from where you're from in relation to your Americanism? I know that this is more than your show calls for, but
I think it's a great question. Cause yeah, I mean, growing up in Colorado, like it just felt sort of like boundless. You can be whatever you want to be. Now, granted, that's also generational, mm-hmm. but there wasn't anything rooted in like, there's history here. Our family goes back 8 generations in this house. Like mm-hmm. there was no legacy. It was my parents who moved to Colorado from Michigan and the East Coast. So there's like a very different sense than if you were rooted in somewhere, like somebody who grew up in Philly or grew up in, you know, in Maine or in, I don't know, just in New York City or in anywhere really, has a very different perspective on how the world has changed. And Mike would know because Mike grew up in the Philadelphia area.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. I'm from Philly, but I moved when I was 6 to Orange County, California. And so what the very unintentional lesson I learned is roots are stupid. Do what you want. And so the older I get, the more socialist and community driven I've become. Mm-hmm. There's still that part of me that's like, why live near family? All these things are dumb. Carve your own path, which feels much more Western, the fight your way through the mountains. And so I feel much more.
It is more Western.
Nature versus nurture. I think where I grew up mattered so much more than the people I came from. Most of my family stayed in the Philly area. And you can run into any store, you run into 18 people, you know. And to me, I was like, that's insane. Also, you don't need to know anybody. Do your own thing always. And I definitely feel more attached to the rugged individualism of the Western American lie than
I do too.
Than the like decrepit old, and this is just mine because of how I am, the decrepit old find your roots and fight anybody who's new and any new idea. That's what the East Coast means to me, having gone back every summer and stuff, and it just feels like rot and stifled. And I'm aware that that's, you know, narrow.
Sure,
end of thought.
you're saying that because you're a white man, and it is the exact like right thing to say as a modifier to your experience within the current context, but like your experience as it exists is something that resonates very deeply with me. You know, and I think that it has something to do with the fact that our families are both Sicilian. You know, it's small, but it's real too. You know, like when you're white in America,
life's just hard.
Life's hard as a white person in America.
I apologize. But you look like you're going to make a good point.
No, I certainly wasn't. It is very interesting at my fancy podcast school to try and talk about who we want to tell stories and why.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially when we start talking about certain like oral histories or traditions within certain contexts, like I think that very much so the conversation has struggled to incorporate people who it would be easier to just incorporate in the mainstream American, like this is our experience of childhood. I think that a lot of white people have an experience of being raised by an immigrant. If their parents were raised in the 60s in metropolitan areas and were white, like where it's like, God, I'm so embarrassed of my mom who's so invested in being Sicilian. I'm embarrassed because I'm white. My world has all the ease of whiteness. But my mother, who's conservative at this point, you know, like is the woman who, you know, like when my dad met her, he assumed she was Mexican. She's dark skinned, you know, like she's Italian, but you know, she got like her shit from being Mediterranean looking. You know, like, mm-hmm. how do you go about being American in that sense? And all three of us have Italian roots with different things. But yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really raised Italian at all. Even my grandparents were very like not interested in being that, mostly because it was not okay to be Italian when my grandfather was a kid in the, you know, 20s and 30s and 40s, which there's a great You Must Remember This season that just came out. It's Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. So she talks about kind of the two lenses of race that occurred and how, you know, when Dean Martin's starting to be a singer, being Italian is as much a minority and as much discriminated against as many other groups, yeah. Right? So I mean, I really wasn't raised into it at all. It's like, I have an Italian last name, and, you know, and it's almost like it's a fun, like, underline to throw on mm-hmm. things, like, oh, we're Italian, you know, but it's not like I feel Italian. And I don't know, like, I think part of the thing about being American, at least for me, is that I don't really identify as a person with a country at all. I just sort of, like, I exist in this perpetual state of unknowing that is American life, where it's like, hey, look,
the barely their culture.
Yeah, I'm going to survive. I'm going to consume, because guess what? That's the reliable culture. And then otherwise, I don't fucking know. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, hey, great job on Les Choses Francaises Arbitraires. You're each going to get 2 points.
Hell yeah.
And it's time to hop into the final topic. Can you believe we're almost done? Kate, you have 12 points right now. And Mike, you have 13 points. It's a real tight
neck
game.
And neck.
Crazy, crazy. So for the final topic, Kate, you get first crack at this. Do you have a vague idea about Maine cabin masters?
I do not. And I'm not going to waste people's time. I have no fucking clue. Maine's cabin masters? Do they have, like, what does that mean?
Well, that's what you're supposed to tell me. But yes, Maine cabin masters.
Maine's cabin masters. I would say the people who have built residences from a very, like early America. Am I nailing it? Am I doing this exactly right?
You're doing very well. You're doing very well for declaring yourself incapable.
That's what I think.
Great.
Okay, I'll declare myself incapable. I want Twinkies. How can you say whatever? Doesn't matter. If that didn't resonate, I was wrong. Mike.
Okay, Mike, what do you got?
Historically, there are two kinds of cabin traditions in America. There's, of course, the Lincoln Logs that everybody knew and grew up with as toys if they couldn't afford Legos, that comes from Iowa and the land of Lincoln. And then there's the Maine cabin masters, where they use a softer curve and more sawed in between their logs. It's not as easy as a kid's toy, but it is actually will keep you warmer in winter and cooler in the summer. And
hell yeah.
The work of the Maine cabin masters.
I like it. I like it. You're both wrong, but I love that you went to a cabin place, which is what's important. You followed context clues to some correctness. Maine cabin masters is a reality television show.
No shit.
That's currently on the Magnolia Network. It follows a group of guys that restore and renovate cabins in Maine.
I don't believe it.
The maniac version of the Property Brothers.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Master carpenters include Matt Dixie Dix, Jared Jedi Baker, and the show is hosted by Chase Morrill and his designer sister Ashley. Isn't that exciting?
Good for him. Yeah. They had a great time there.
They did. They did. They're putting these cabins back together. They're mastering them.
It's as they should.
As they should. I'm going to give you each 1 point, largely because you're good looking people.
Mm-hmm.
Facts.
And we're going to grade purely on superficiality on the mm-hmm. on the last mm-hmm. round. Mm-hmm. That does mean that we have a winner this week. Mike has 14 points and has yeah. won a vague idea.
And I've never been to Maine, baby.
Never.
And I believe every Maine. One of those sentences. You're right. You're right. You are right, Mike. You deserve it.
So, Mike, do you have anything that you would like to plug this week you want listeners to know about?
Sure. I don't know when this comes out. I'm on a current podcast break, except for this. But you go over to Movie of the Year, no matter when you're hearing this. It's a great movie-based show. Maybe they're still going through 2021. Maybe they're in the current season of 1991. Maybe they're in the future. Or check out the Superhero Show, where we rate and review every single live-action TV show based on comic books every week. I think that's all my shit. Oh, you know what? No, if you're into accounting for some reason, check out Off the Books, a show I'm producing for work.
Nice. Cool. That's about how to cook the books, then?
It's how to cook the books, yeah. We give all the tips. Do you want to be the next Wolf of Wall Street? Listen to Off the Books.
Yeah, you're going to want to boil some water. That's number one. Got to soften those books up.
Yeah, they're too firm.
You're going to braise them. great. Kate, anything that you would like to plug?
Yeah, I would like to plug the notion of forward progress.
Great.
What I'm I mean by it. That, yeah, and what I mean by that is that I would say my arguably successful first two seasons of movies I'd like to fix. Guess how it's ending? Tompkins and I got bored. We don't want to do it anymore.
I've never heard of a podcast that does that.
That's yeah. weird. Yeah, no yeah, creative yeah. project has ever just been abandoned.
So we're abandoning it because we've got a lot to say. We got a lot to talk about, and it's not about movies anymore, we've decided.
That makes sense.
So we're done, and we'll that tell you. It is big news.
But still look at the MILF feed. Something new is coming, it sounds like.
Something new is coming. We've got a lot to introduce to you guys. Can't wait for you to consume the current iteration of MILF and transfer it to your more essential daily.
Daily
agenda.
That's a terrifying statement.
Damn. See, I was hoping that it was going to be like moments I'd like to
fixate upon.
Just like yeah.
Biggest moments of regret in your lives.
It might be that too early to say. Okay. I'll let you know.
All right. You heard it here first, people. The MILF you know is gone. The MILF you want and need is coming.
It's on its way.
That's the hottest sentence you've ever said, Nate.
best moment
very
of my life.
Big deal. Yeah, you did a good job.
Thank you both so much for coming on the show. This was a wild and excellent study of the state of Maine and nothing else at all. And I love that we got into it.
This is what Maine's all about these days.
It is. Truly. It is. I mean, it is technically about Maine because Kate is in Maine. So we were talking Maine the whole time.
The whole time. Mm-hmm. It's impossible for it to be any other truth.
So yeah, thank you both for being on the show. It's been You're a welcome. Real blast. Listeners, if you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. That really helps us out. You can also check out other shows we make, including Roll for Blank, Streets of Mage, the Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast that I host. It's a lot of fun. People roll dice and they make jokes and there's elves. And otherwise, I really like forward progress as a notion. So I'm going to plug that. Let's move forward, people. We've been spinning our wheels for 2.5 years now at this point. We're arguing about stuff we're not going to get over this. Let's just move forward, mm-hmm. not backward. Forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to try for.
Hell yeah. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you. We have all had a vague idea about Maine this week, and that is a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Grokowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.